Is this thing on? Hello, hello. What is up, you guys? You are listening to Grow with Ro. I am your host, Ramana. And on this show, we have discussions that help you feel better, think better, do better, and get you from where you are to where you want to be. So let's get into it. Hello. Welcome back. I am back on the mainland. Ryan and I went to St. Thomas for an entire week. I haven't taken a week-long vacation like that. God, I think literally since when we went to Hawaii like 3-4 years ago. So it was wild taking time off work because I have like 9 clients in Denver who I had in person there who are all still training with me virtually. I've mentioned this before. And so because I train them virtually, even when Ryan and I go away for weddings and like little weekend getaways, you know, Thursday, Friday, Monday sort of situation, I'll still train clients because it's virtual. So it's really hard for me to be like, oh, I won't work, when sometimes all it requires is me to just like sit on the couch and tell them what to do over the phone, right? So I have not taken any time off of work in 2 years. But this week I took time off. I didn't work at all. And when I told my clients I was taking a week off, pretty much all of them were like, woo, you go, girl. Finally, about time. You took some time for yourself. And I was like, okay, maybe there's an issue here that I need to evaluate. But I wanted to do a recap today of the trip, as well as some things that I learned along the way, things that came up, conversations that were had. So that is what today's episode is going to be about. So first off, I was really excited about going to the Caribbean because as you guys know, I like can't leave the country. Well, I can leave. I just can't come back. I am a DACA person, which means that I've done like zero traveling apart from the US and Hawaii, like ever in my life since I was 11. Okay. The reason we got to go to St. Thomas, Ryan's friend, very good friend of like 10 years, is getting married, and she wanted a destination wedding, and she was deciding between two places. And she picked St. Thomas. One of the contributing factors for the reason that she picked St. Thomas was so that I could go. Because if she picked the other location, Ryan would have to have a different date or go solo because I'm not allowed to leave the country. So that was like so incredibly sweet of her. Very grateful for that opportunity to be able to go and have that experience with her and with Ryan. So just want to shout out, I don't know if she'll ever listen to this, hello Jess, but very grateful for that. I think being in St. Thomas, though, it made me appreciate Florida a lot, because I think once you live in Florida, it's hard to get as excited for these island trips because it's like another palm tree, another beach, right? And it's like very different from when I lived in Denver and then we were going to Hawaii, because I'm like, oh my God, like there's no palm trees here. You know, it's all mountains and there's no water. And it's very different than having beautiful beaches here where I live and going to yet another beach. And so kind of the highlight of going to another beach when you live in Florida is the culture. Immerse yourself in the food, immerse yourself in the culture. And I don't know if we did it wrong, but I didn't really find there to be like a huge in-your-face cultural immersion the way that I had experienced in, let's say, Hawaii, right? You go to Hawaii and you do nothing but eat amazing fruit and fresh fish. And that wasn't our experience in St. Thomas. St. Thomas felt a little more... And I'm sorry if I'm like politically incorrect here, because I don't know all the politics and the information, but it felt a little more like third world country-esque. Everything was very run down. There were just like rusted up cars like laying all over the place. The homes were all falling apart. I know that the island experienced 2 hurricanes within a week what was it, 7 years ago. And I know that that had made a significant impact, but I just don't know if the island really looked much different prior to the hurricane. I have no clue. I should look up some pictures, but it felt like that was basically what it looks like there. And I couldn't find a single piece of fruit. I did have some fish at this beach bar restaurant thing, and I asked for cheese because they had like a baked potato with it, and she brings me out a Kraft Singles cheese, like wrapped in the plastic and everything. And I was like, this is not cultural immersion. What is happening? So my favorite dinner that we did have there was, there's an incredible restaurant called the Old Stone Farmhouse that's in like a refurbished, it was a donkey and horse house. And they even took the feeding trough that was like the size of a wall and they turned it into this makeshift fireplace that's like candle lit. It's gorgeous in there. Gorgeous, gorgeous, gorgeous. Like huge giant arch windows that are fully open. It's like a giant gate window and it's all stone and candle lit and it was perfect. And they had grass-fed beef and I was like, yes, I am home. It was amazing. But other than that, I don't know. I feel like I enjoyed the food experience of the tropics in Hawaii more than I did in St. Thomas. And it was my first time having an all-inclusive resort kind of experience. We spent half the time at this all-inclusive resort with the entire wedding party, which was a blast. But obviously, if you're at an all-inclusive resort, all you're kind of doing is staying at the resort and revolving your entire day around your next meal and all the drinks that you get in between that. So you can imagine how that went. And then the second half of the trip, we drove to the other side of the island and stayed at a Margaritaville, which was really fun. And of course, you know, you're like driving through these kind of like decrepit streets and then you make a left-hand turn into Margaritaville and it's like perfectly manicured lawns and palm trees and I was just like, I am home because it felt like Florida. And I did really appreciate that. So, and it, I mean, the highlight of like being able to experience the culture, I guess, was the taxi rides with our drivers. Ryan would have a lot of conversations and just get to know their way of life and their opinions on politics and what their experiences with the hurricane were. One guy told us he had to sit inside his bathroom because it's like the smallest point in the house, right? And so you're like the most protected in there. He sat in his bathroom for 16 hours just watching like the roof of his house blowing off and these sorts of things. And so hearing these stories, I think, was the highlight of an actual immersive experience. I also got to swim with dolphins, which was great because the last time that I did that, I think I was maybe 7 or 8. I don't actually remember it, but I have a picture of it. And so I'm very excited to just like put them side by side. And what else did we do? We went snorkeling. That was about it for St. Thomas. I hear St. John's or St. John is a very different experience. I have a friend who had his honeymoon there. So maybe going back to the Virgin Islands, that would be the move, is checking that island out. But on the way back, crazy story, I almost got deported. I'm being a little bit dramatic with that, but I had to go through customs on the way back. And I don't know what it is about customs, but I feel like the people who work customs just are very cold and very scary. And I don't know if that's because they have to deal with people trying to like charm their way into the country all the time or something like that, or bamboozle them to get their way. But we walk up to this customs lady. She's very cold. She's like, "Where are you from, Ryan?" They're like, "America." And she's like, "Were you born in America?" And I'm like, "No." She's like, "Where were you born?" I said, "Slovakia." She's like, "What's your status?" And I said, "DACA." And she's like, "Let me see your paperwork." And I'm like, shit, what paperwork? Like what? What? So then I go through my wallet and luckily I had my employment authorization card on me. So I hand that over to her. I give her my ID. I give her my employment authorization card. And I said, "This is all I have." She's like, "What do you mean this is all you have? You're in customs." And I'm like, "Okay, but I'm in the U.S. And she said something about, "Well, DACA people can't, this is like the grand continental, I don't know the terminology, something about the Virgin Islands being different than being on the mainland, right? Meanwhile, if you Google, can DACA people go to the Virgin Islands? It says yes. They just need a state ID, okay? Because it is U.S. territory. So she takes this and she walks me over to this like bulletproof room, tells me to leave all my stuff outside. She tells Ryan he has to wait for me on the other side. And I have to go into this room. Everyone's cold. Everyone is scary. I have to sit and fill out some paperwork. I'm like shaking. I'm like, this is literally my worst nightmare. If you have not seen the movie The Terminal with Tom Hanks, that is your assignment for tonight. Ryan and I watched it actually last night because I told my friend about this story. And I was like, it felt like I was about to be stuck in limbo at this airport for the next 18 years. Like Tom Hanks in The Terminal. Movie is so good. It's based on a true story about a guy who, because of like a Bulgarian war or something, couldn't enter the US, but he also couldn't return back to his country. And so he actually had to live at the airport for 18 years. Wild. True story. So really good movie. We watched it last night. But I was like, that's it. I now belong to this airport. This is my new home. Hello. Hi, house. And I filled out this paperwork and I give it to the guy and he just says, have a good day. And then I just get to leave. And I was like, what the hell was the point of that? But then I look at my ID and I look at my employment authorization card and both of them expire 2 weeks from that day. 2 weeks. Okay? 2 weeks. It has not been in my planner to renew my ID. I have to do this every 2 years as part of DACA. I have to pay the US $500 and reapply to be able to stay and work here for another 2 years. This is just what they're doing with DACA. And, you know, I have a planner every year. And so I would mark like PT insurance is expiring and whatever is due, but you can't like mark that 2 years in advance. So I don't know how to notify myself that these things are coming up. But thank God that this happened because I wouldn't have known to renew my ID in the next 2 weeks. Because even my state ID, I can only get it for 2 years at a time because it has to coincide with my status with DACA. And the point is that if it were 2 weeks from now, I probably would have been stuck at that airport because they don't let you travel with an expired ID or with my expired DACA status. So holy crap, that was like a blessing because that could have been so freaking bad. It was really scary. So that's kind of the recap on St. Thomas and on that experience. I also want to say the next time someone tries to tell me that alcohol does not impact them, their behavior, their personality, the way that they navigate the world, that is the most BS thing that you can say, okay? Because there are pros and cons to alcohol. And the thing is that the same effects that cause the pros with alcohol can, in the certain situation, cause the cons with alcohol, okay? Case in point, I hate flying. I'm afraid of flying. It sucks. I don't understand how we can be stuck in this big metal tube just flying through the air, okay? And all we're being held up there by is these little wings that we just trust that these screws are checked on every day. And sometimes you see like duct tape on there. And I'm just like, you think some high school kid who just got this job at this airport really cares to check on every single screw as part of his job every single day? Probably not. He's probably getting a little high, showing up for work. He's like, okay, like, yeah, you gotta check the screw and blah, blah, blah. I know all is fine. I go through this every day. Autopilot, right? So it's terrifying to me. I hate flying. I don't like that I can't be like, okay, you know what? I'm a little scared. Like, let's hit pause. Let's just open the door. Let me get out for a second. We'll return. We'll come back in. No, you're just stuck up there and whatever happens, like it's happening to you. There's nothing you can do about it. I don't like that. Okay. Hashtag control freak much. Maybe. That's fine. I don't like it. So because I don't like it, I sedate myself before I get on a plane. I sedate myself with two or three mimosas before I get on a plane. This was my experience with Ryan on the way to St. Thomas. We got to the airport nice and early because it only took an hour and a half to drive to Orlando at 5 a.m. on a Saturday instead of 2.5 hours. So we got there early. We got some margaritas, actually, because this Mexican restaurant, for some reason, was open at 7 a.m. serving margaritas. So we're like, you know, when in Rome, even though we're not going to Mexico, but you get it, whatever. So we had our margaritas and we get on this plane and we have a couple, I order a champagne for each of us on the plane. And we're having conversation the whole way there. There's turbulence. And I literally look to Ryan and I'm like, I don't even care if we're going down. We are going down. Like, I love you. This is great. And I'm like sing-songy, literally like that talking, right? Not a care in the world. It is what it is. I can't control it. If I die, I die. Okay? That is me in an airplane on alcohol. Okay? Now, on the way back, very, very, very different story. By the time the day of travel came around, I've had enough alcohol. It's been a long week. I don't want any more. I don't want to be on a 3-hour flight only to get off the plane, have to drive home from Orlando, get home. It's still going to be a long travel day, and I'm tired. So I don't drink. No, thank you. Not today. We get on the plane, and there is turbulence, okay? And I am having a flat-out panic attack in my seat for 3 straight hours. I always have to sit at the window so I can stare out the window. Because if you look out the window, it sort of looks like all is okay. I'm disillusioned to think that I would be able to see out the window that it's not okay. So whatever, it provides a sense, a false sense of safety for me to be able to watch out the window. And I'm sweating and I am hyperventilating and I am crying like into my sweatshirt. But the worst part comes, we go into this thick cloud and the plane is like falling. Like we are falling and then rocking side to side. It's not just these tiny little jitters. We are falling and I'm like, no, 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 no. Literally like that, because I was like, this is it. I kid you not, I saw my entire life flash before my eyes. It is the end. The whole plane kind of screamed. The kids are crying. I'm freaking out. My seat was wet from how sweaty my legs were from this experience. Okay. And I was like, that's it. I want to go home. I want my mom. I literally was like, I want my mom. I want my mom. I want my mom. And I think it is hilarious that no matter how old we get, the second we're in a moment of like really big fear, we're like, I just want my mom. It's freaking hilarious. But that was my response to it sober, okay? Because guess what? Alcohol shuts down your frontal lobe. What's your frontal lobe in charge of? Your frontal lobe is in charge of your fight or flight response. Your frontal lobe is in charge of your inhibitions. Your frontal lobe shuts down your common sense and your impulse control, right? And so it literally numbs you to all things fear, to all things care, to all things logic, to all things common sense. That's it. That is why sometimes couples fight more when they're drinking, because all of the things, all the tools that you learn to create more harmony within your dynamic on a day-to-day basis, you forget about. There's not a care in the world. You revert back to your natural programming, the programming that then you would probably have if you were single in the world again and just back to yourself before you did any work on certain things, right? Whether it be on your filter, your social acuity, your emotional intelligence, your ability to emotionally regulate, your ability to detect if something is, you know, rude or disrespectful, these sorts of things, right? Your rawness. And I just think that that was like a really fascinating way to be able to see the direct result of what happens in drinking alcohol in like a positive way, because I know a lot of people who have to sedate themselves in order to get on a flight because it's just not a natural thing. And we're all sitting there pretending like, I love flying. Do you? Like, can you do it sober? Like, would you do it sober? Would you do it by choice, you know? Or are you doing it because it's like the only way to really get somewhere? Because bottom line, we have to transport ourselves to go places for work or for, you know, because we want to get to a different location. So I just don't know if anyone would just choose to fly if the option was to get somewhere without having to fly. I'm not saying like a boat. I just mean like teleportation, you know, or something like that. Just like snap your fingers and you are where you want to be. Like that'd be really cool. But I just know that so many people sedate themselves. My client literally has to pop a pill and just knock herself out and until she arrives at the next location. Like, I completely understand it. Bottom line is, I think the lesson learned from that one is, okay, maybe it's just smart for me to drink to get on a plane, just because why would I want 3 hours of misery like that ever again? I don't. No, thank you. But also understanding that, yeah, let's say couples, right? Or I think a lot of even mental health stuff typically is wrapped up in substances as well. Like most people who end up harming themselves, committing suicide, things like this, typically aren't sober. Okay. Yes, I know there's exceptions to this, but from conversations I've had with people and the way these things go, like when you're sober, you can talk yourself out of it. When you're sober, you have a little bit more of that logic and you have the impulse control and you have the, there's like a mechanism, for example, that stops you from just jumping off a patio when you're sitting there watching the sunset, right? You can have the thought of, wow, I could literally, not from like a dark place, but like you can think like, dang, you know, it's crazy. Like in a split second, I could just like accidentally fall off the balcony, right? Or I can leap in front of this train, not from a place of sadness, but your brain has a mechanism to stop you from doing those things instead of acting on that tiny, tiny second of impulsivity. And so those are typically the mechanisms that would stop someone from actually committing harm or committing pain, but when you're to themselves, but when you are sedated, those mechanisms aren't there. And so you are more likely to not have the forethought of the consequences or the repercussions of that action. And instead, you just act on the impulse. And I think that that's just something really important to keep in mind, because I know in the past when I was really sad and like not in a good place, things would get worse when I would drink, right? And I would have thoughts, and whether they be like suicidal thoughts or just self-harm thoughts or just dark thoughts that were more a result of the drinking than if I were sober. Because when I'm sober, I know better. When I'm sober, I can get myself out of it. When I'm sober, I can understand, you know, emotions change. This is just a moment in time, like it will pass, those sorts of things. But you can't rationalize those things with yourself in a state where your brain is literally shut off. So that's just something, if there's anyone listening to this who does struggle and finds that sometimes they have really dark thoughts and go to dark places, and maybe they you can see the correlation of when I smoke weed or when I drink past a certain, let's say past two drinks, or even in general, period, right? And even if it's not that night, maybe it's the next day. Well, it takes some time for your brain to repair itself from the drinking and from the smoking, believe it or not. And so to come completely back online, understand that those substances are affecting your mind in that way, and that every time you choose to partake in a substance, you are flipping a coin, because there is a fun side to drinking, but there is a dark side to drinking. There is a fun side to smoking weed, but smoking weed is not all good stuff. It does still have negative repercussions, whether it's impacting your sleep. Most people who I know have sleep apnea, smoke weed. And I know that weed actually, it affects your brain in a way where you never really hit full REM. So even if you think, oh, I sleep better when I get high, no, you're just sedated. You're literally unconscious. And so even if you think you're sleeping, right, your brain is not repairing in that sleep to the degree that it would if you went to bed sober. And so, and I'm not sitting here like telling you what to do and how to be, because I smoke weed sometimes, right? And obviously I like drinks sometimes, but I try to be aware of this stuff and notice it in myself and connect the dots so that I can make an active choice of when I want to smoke by taking a second to think the forethought, to think, okay, what do I have tomorrow? Do I need to be high functioning for it, right? My brain, do I need to be quick witted? Is it okay to function with some brain fog tomorrow, right? Or these sorts of things. How am I, do I feel under the weather? Do I feel like I'm getting sick? Do I want to have crappy sleep the next few days? Like, just have these thoughts. Try to pause before acting and see how these things affect you, because they do affect everyone differently, and we tend to just see them as that's the norm, right? I'm just used to not sleeping ever, or I'm just used to being tired. I'm used to having to have coffee all day long. Well, no, actually, if you are tired throughout the day, In America, we are a society of high functioning, overworked people. We are a country built on work, which is a good thing, work ethic, right? But it also can be tied to, it could be a bad thing in the sense that we're also a country with a lot of people who tie their entire self-worth to their productivity, to their production, to what they achieve, right? And so we have to keep going and do more and do better and yada, yada, yada. And so we're used to pushing through and using stimulants, using coffee to keep going, and then maybe weed to stop going because we just can't turn our brains off, right? But if you don't drink coffee and you're like, I don't know how I would survive without it. Well, actually, your body has a mechanism of telling you that you need rest and repair. And when you're constantly drinking coffee throughout the day, every second you yawn, you are trying to override your body's natural way of letting you know that you need to take a pause, sleep, take a break, reset, relax, recalibrate. And it is very easy to overlook those mechanisms in the world where we have so many things available to us to just keep us going and to do more and to be higher functioning and higher achieving and never rest, never stop. Someone out there is doing better than you, right? So that's just something to keep in mind. I think a good rule of thumb around habits, whether it be substances, eating, health, wellness versus, you know, just quote unquote living, even caffeine, right, is this 80-20 rule. So if you watch my Instagram, you'll see that I'm posting grass-fed and organic and raw milk and raw dairy and biohacky stuff and how to be better and control and, you know, do better and feel better wellness, right? But then you also see me at restaurants and me having some drinks and these sorts of things. And so what I like to see this as, or what I like to explain this as in the way that I teach it to my clients, is this 80-20 rule, where 80% of your life, of your day, of your week, 80% of it is spent in this place of good habits, healthy, building, wellness, longevity. And 20% is the screw all of that piece. Enjoy yourself, quote unquote, live a little. This was a conversation that Ryan and I had even in St. Thomas, because it was really challenging to find quality food there that was quote unquote to the caliber of things that we would eat here, right? Everything was cooked in seed oils, everything. Like I said, the cheese was Kraft singles, right? There was no fruit. I had no fruit the entire week that I was there. And this was a really challenging thing, because even when we're back home, we try to find, even restaurants that we go to, we try to find healthier options or make better options, right? So, or make better choices. So even in St. Thomas, the resort we stayed at, I just had eggs, like 4 eggs and bacon for breakfast, for example. But you can just tell that those eggs were not cooked in good oils. And then you ask if they have butter and they don't. They use margarine, and it's tough. And it's tough in today's world to truly live a 100 life, because there is either temptation or just a lack of resources pretty much everywhere around you, okay? So I actually have a couple that I'm friends with who, and I thought this was the topic of conversation with Rye, is like, They're very strict with their diet. They're animal based, but they're very strict about it to the point where even if they go on a road trip, for example, they bring the grill, they bring their steak, and they'll grill out in a Walmart parking lot, right? It's this whole thing. And versus Ryan and I are like, okay, well, we're on a road trip. Like, it's an opportunity to experience new restaurants and do these new things, right? And we're at this place in St. Thomas, and I'm like, I don't even know if these two, the couple, could even go on a trip like this. Like, what would it be like to go to a wedding and not be able to stay, you know, let's say if everyone got an Airbnb or everyone's at the all-inclusive resort, but you're going to go out of your way to maybe get an Airbnb so that you can cook and you can grocery shop and you can't eat at the wedding because the food at the wedding isn't grass-fed and isn't clean, right? Or you can't really experience different cultures because the way that they might cook isn't with the correct oils and these sorts of things. And I think a part of me was like, dang, you know, because usually when I'm back home and I watch how they eat, I definitely, it's very admirable and the commitment to it is amazing. But I just realized going on trips, like, it is absolutely impossible. Because like I said, me doing my best was ordering 4 eggs and bacon for breakfast. Everything else on the entire menu was granola, was bagels, was ham, sausage, or French toast. It was impossible. It was like my only other option would be to not eat. And so I just want to give you permission with this of like, if you are someone who's really trying to change their habits and be better and you're making these changes at home, maybe you're throwing out the oils you have at home and you're looking at ingredients now with things you buy, right? But let's say you travel a lot for work or you go on a lot of trips. Like, here's my permission to you that it's okay. You're not completely failing by giving in and enjoying the things around you when you are on these trips and having these experiences. Just keep in mind 80-20, right? So let's say you're away for a week. That doesn't mean take the entire week to indulge and eat completely differently than how you would at home. Do your best because your identity is still someone who cares and is conscious of these things. But you don't need to beat yourself up if those resources are not available to you. I think too much of a good thing can be bad, right? Because now it is a different degree of obsession. You're not obsessed about not eating, but you're still restrictive. You're obsessed about only what you can eat. And I think that to a degree that can keep you from having a lot of experiences that you would have had otherwise, because like I said, you just wouldn't be able to go to these places or do these things or hang out with these people because your whole life now revolves around how will you be able to get these certain foods. I think this 80-20 rule also just applies even when you're at home. I don't have restriction in my diet. If you're having cravings, that is your body signaling a hormone issue to you. That's it. It is literally a signal from your body, okay? And your job is to figure out what that signal is. And you can Google, what do my cravings mean? And you'll find a sheet that's like, if you're craving sugar, it means this. If you're craving fats, it means this. If you're craving chocolate, it means this. And you can figure out a way to fill those cravings in a clean way so that you get your hormones in balance and the cravings actually go away. Once I went like animal based and I started eating red meat every day and my raw dairy and these sorts of things, my cravings went away. Once a week, maybe I'll crave a cupcake or a cinnamon roll or something like that. But it is so much easier to live when the cravings aren't there yelling at you every day and then you're having to exert willpower to resist them versus if you don't actually have those cravings happening and signaling to you, you need this, but don't have it, right? That's a way more challenging place to be. And so because those cravings aren't there anymore, when I do feel that there is something I want, like a cinnamon roll, I let myself have it. That is that 20%. Because, and I've said this in episodes prior, I trust that I will go back to my 80% behavior without without any issues, because that is now ingrained in my identity. That is how I want to eat. That is what tastes good to me. That is what makes me feel the best. That is what helps me sleep the best. That is what helps me perform at the gym the best, right? And so when you have established that that's your identity, that is who you are and how you want to eat, then the times that you have the craving, it's okay. Have it. That's your 20%. It does not have to be punishment. It does not have to be rigidity. It does not have to be willpower. It does not have to be avoidance, right? It is a lifestyle. Once you start thinking of food as fuel, such a cliche. I wish there was a better way to say it. Let me think. Start thinking of food as something that makes you your best version of yourself. Okay, your best version physically, your best version emotionally, right? A lot of things I dealt with growing up were mood swings and sensitivity. And these things are affected by your hormones. And so if anything, look at food as directly affecting your hormones. And then you can start to look at what's going to help balance your hormones or what's going to help put them out of whack. Right? That's kind of a cool place to be. Now you're in full control of whether you're going to have mood swings or be extra sensitive and be kind of emotionally volatile. Like, that's cool, right? And so eating in a hormone balancing way is going to make you your best self to your coworkers, your best self performance wise at work, your best self as a partner to your significant other, your best self just for your own mental health, right? These things are all controlled by the things you eat. And so it's like, once you start thinking of food in this way, it is much easier to strive for that 80% as being your baseline and your norm, okay? You're not gonna want the other things once you understand that they make you moody, once you understand that they make you cranky, once you understand that they make you bitchy, once you understand that they make you a crybaby, right? And that way, you're not going to be afraid of having to avoid food. You're not going to be afraid of having to exert willpower. Once your hormones are balanced, all those things fall in line. And then when the 20% impulse kind of comes into play, you'll have it and then you'll move on. And you won't feel guilt about it. You won't feel shame about it because you know, okay, let's go back to regulating. Is this making sense? So anyway, I know this episode was kind of all over the place, but that is it. I hope you got some value. I hope you learned something about me. Maybe I answered something that you wanted to have some clarity on. Maybe I phrased something in a way today that finally clicked for you or got you into a place of self-reflection, which is all that I aim to do with this podcast, is help you reflect on your own thoughts, your own feelings, your own beliefs, your own programming, right? Because only with self-awareness comes choice. Otherwise, you are just swimming through the world doing whatever someone else told you to do at some point, and you don't even know if that's something that you want or something that truly aligns with you. So if you got some value, please pass this episode on, share it on Instagram, tag me so I can repost it, leave a review, and that is it. I will see you next week. Toodaloo!